If there was one thing that he hated more than another, it was the way she had of waking him in the morning. She did it on purpose, of course. It was her way of establishing her grievance for the day, and he was not going to let her know how successful it was. But really, really, to wake a sensitive person like that was positively dangerous. It took him hours to get over it, simply hours. She came into the room, buttoned up in an overall with a handkerchief over her head, thereby proving that she had been up herself and slaving since dawn, and called, "Reginald? Eh? What? What's that? What's the matter? It's time to get up. It's 8:30. And out she went, shutting the door quietly after her, to gloat over her triumph, he supposed. What was the matter with her? Hadn't he 3 times as many pupils now as when they were first married, earned 3 times as much, paid for every stick and stone that they possessed, and now had begun to shell out for Adrian's kindergarten? And had he ever reproached her for not having a penny to her name? Never a word, never a sign. The truth was that once you married a woman, she became insatiable. And the truth was that nothing was more fatal for an artist than marriage. At any rate, until he was well over 40. Why had he married her? He asked himself this question on an average about 3 times a day, but he never could answer it satisfactorily. He pulled the blind up with a jerk, and standing upon the pale square of sunlight that lay upon the carpet like a sheet of cream blotting paper, he began to do his exercises. Deep breathing, bending forward and back, squatting like a frog and shooting out his legs, for if there was one thing he had a horror of, it was of getting fat, and men in his profession had a dreadful tendency that way. However, there was no sign of it at present. He was, he decided, just right, just in good proportion. In fact, he couldn't help a thrill of satisfaction when he saw himself in the glass, dressed in a morning coat, dark grey trousers, grey socks, and a black tie with a silver thread in it. Not that he was vain. He couldn't stand vain men. No, the sight of himself gave him a thrill of purely artistic satisfaction. "Voilà tout," said he, passing his hand over his sleek hair. That little easy French phrase, blown so lightly from his lips, like a whiff of smoke, reminded him that someone had asked him again the evening before if he was English. People seemed to find it impossible to believe that he hadn't some southern blood. True, there was an emotional quality in his singing that had nothing of the John Bull in it. The door handle rattled and turned round and round. Adrian's head popped through.
"Please, Father, Mother says breakfast quite ready, please."
"Very well," said Reginald. Then, just as Adrian disappeared, "Adrian?"
"Yes, Father?"
"You haven't said good morning." A few months ago, Reginald had spent a weekend in a very aristocratic family, where the father received his little sons in the morning and shook hands with them. Reginald thought the practice charming, and introduced it immediately. But Adrian felt dreadfully silly at having to shake hands with his own father every morning, and why did his father always sort of sing to him instead of talk? In excellent temper, Reginald walked into the dining room and sat down before a pile of letters, a copy of the Times, and a little covered dish. He glanced at the letters and then at his breakfast. There were 2 thin slices of bacon and 1 egg. "Don't you want any bacon?" he asked his wife. "No, I prefer a cold baked apple. I don't feel the need of bacon every morning." Now, did she mean that there was no need for him to have bacon every morning either, and that she grudged having to cook it for him? "If you don't want to cook the breakfast," said he, "why don't you keep a servant? You know we can afford one, and you know how I loathe to see my wife doing the work. Simply because all the women we've had in the past have been failures and utterly upset my regime, and made it almost impossible for me to have any pupils here, you've given up trying to find a decent woman. It's not impossible to train a servant, is it? I mean, it doesn't require genius." "But I prefer to do the work myself. It makes life so much more peaceful. Run along, Adrian, darling, and get ready for school." "Oh, no, that's not it." Reginald pretended to smile. "You do the work yourself because, for some extraordinary reason, you love to humiliate me. Objectively, you may not know that, but subjectively it's the case. This last remark so delighted him that he cut open an envelope as gracefully as if he had been on the stage.
"Dear Mr. Peacock, I feel I cannot go to sleep until I have thanked you again for the wonderful joy your singing gave me this evening. Quite unforgettable. You make me wonder, as I have not wondered since I was a girl, if this is all. I mean, if this ordinary world is all. If there is not, perhaps, for those of us who understand, divine beauty and richness awaiting us, if we only have the courage to see it, and to make it ours. The house is so quiet. I wish you were here now, that I might thank you in person. Yours most sincerely, Oenone Fell. P.S. I am in every afternoon this week."
The letter was scrawled in violet ink on thick handmade paper. Vanity, that bright bird, lifted its wings again, lifted them until he felt his breast would break. "Oh, well, don't let us quarrel," said he, and actually flung out a hand to his wife. But she was not great enough to respond. "I must hurry and take Adrian to school," said she. "Your room is quite ready for you." "Very well, very well. Let there be open war between them. But he was hanged if he'd be the first to make it up again." He walked up and down his room, and was not calm again until he heard the outer door close upon Adrian and his wife. Of course, if this went on, he would have to make some other arrangement. He opened the piano and looked up his pupils for the morning. Miss Betty Brittle, the Countess Vilkovska, and Miss Marion Morrow. They were charming, all three. Punctually at 10:30, the doorbell rang. Miss Betty Brittle was there, dressed in white, with her music in a blue silk case.
"I'm afraid I'm early," she said,
blushing and shy, and she opened her big blue eyes very wide.
"Am I?"
"Not at all, dear lady. I'm only too charmed," said Reginald. "Won't you come in?"
"It's such a heavenly morning," said Miss Brittle. "I walked across the park. The flowers were too marvellous."
"Well, think about them while you sing your exercises," said Reginald, sitting down at the piano. "It will give your voice colour and warmth."
"Oh, what an enchanting idea! What a genius Mr. Peacock was!"
She parted her pretty lips and began to sing like a pansy.
"Do you ever practice before a glass?" asked Reginald. "You ought to, you know. It makes the lips more flexible. Come over here."
They went over to the mirror and stood side by side. "Now, sing." But she broke down and blushed more brightly than ever.
"Oh," she cried, "I can't. It makes me feel so silly. It makes me want to laugh. I do look so absurd."
"No, you don't. Don't be afraid," said Reginald. "Now try again." The lesson simply flew, and Betty Brittle quite got over her shyness.
"When can I come again?"
she asked, tying the music up again in the blue silk case.
"I want to take as many lessons as I can just now. Oh, Mr. Peacock, I do enjoy them so much. May I come the day after tomorrow?"
"Dear lady, I shall be only too charmed," said Reginald, bowing her out. His wife came in. "Reginald, can you let me have some money? I must pay the dairy, and will you be in for dinner tonight?"
"Yes, you know I'm singing at Lord Timbuck's at 9:30. Can you make me some clear soup with an egg in it?"
"Yes, and the money, Reginald, it's 8 and 6.
"Surely that's very heavy, isn't it?"
"No, it's just what it ought to be, and Adrian must have milk." There she was, off again. Now she was standing up for Adrian against him. "I have not the slightest desire to deny my child a proper amount of milk," said he. "Here is 10 shillings. The doorbell rang.
"Oh," said the Countess Vilkovska, "the stairs! I have not a breath!"
And she put her hand over her heart as she followed him into the music room. She was all in black, with violets in her bosom.
"Do not make me sing exercises today," she cried, throwing out her hands in her delightful foreign way. "No, today I want only to sing songs. And may I take off my violets? They fade so soon. May I put them here?" And she dropped them in a little vase that stood in front of one of Reginald's photographs.
"Dear lady, I should be only too charmed."
She began to sing, and all was well until she came to the phrase, "You love me, yes, I know you love me." Down dropped his hands from the keyboard. He wheeled round, facing her. "No, no, that's not good enough. You can do better than that," cried Reginald, ardently. "You must sing as if you were in love. Listen, let me try and show you." The lesson was over before that phrase was quite perfect.
"And you are forgetting your violets," said Reginald softly.
"Yes, I think I will forget them," said the Countess, biting her underlip. "What fascinating ways these foreign women have. And you will come to my house on Sunday and make music?" she asked.
"Dear lady, I shall be only too charmed," said Reginald.
"Weep ye no more, sad fountains, why need ye flow so fast?" sang Miss Marion Morrow, but her eyes filled with tears and her chin trembled.
"Is there anything the matter?" asked Reginald. "You're not quite happy this morning."
No, she wasn't. She was awfully miserable. She had those moods sometimes when life seemed almost unbearable. "Ah, I know," he said, "if I could only help."
"But you do, you do. Oh, if it were not for my lessons, I don't feel I could go on.
I wrote a poem after the concert last night, just about what I felt. Of course, it wasn't personal. May I send it to you?"
"Dear lady, I should be only too charmed."
By the end of the afternoon, he was quite tired and lay down on a sofa to rest his voice before dressing. The door of his room was open. He could hear Adrian and his wife talking in the dining room. He dozed. The telephone bell woke him.
"Hinone Fell is speaking. Mr. Peacock, I have just heard that you are singing at Lord Timbuck's tonight. Will you dine with me, and we can go on together afterwards?"
And the words of his reply dropped like flowers down the telephone.
"Dear lady, I should be only too charmed."
What a triumphant evening! The little dinner, tête-à-tête with Hinone Fell, the drive to Lord Timbuck's in her white motor car, when she thanked him again for the unforgettable joy. Triumph upon triumph. And Lord Timbuck's champagne simply flowed. He positively staggered home. But as he let himself into the dark flat, his marvellous sense of elation began to ebb away. He turned up the light in the bedroom. His wife lay asleep, squeezed over to her side of the bed. He remembered suddenly how she had said, when he told her he was going out to dinner, "You might have let me know before." It was incredible, he thought, that she cared so little for him. Incredible that she wasn't interested in the slightest in his triumphs and his artistic career. When so many women in her place would have given their eyes. Yes, he knew it. Why not acknowledge it? And there she lay, an enemy even in her sleep. Must it ever be thus, he thought. The champagne still working. Ah, if we only were friends, how much I could tell her now about this evening. If only I felt that she was here to come back to, that I could confide in her. In his emotion, he pulled off his evening boot and simply hurled it in the corner. The noise woke his wife with a terrible start. She sat up, pushing back her hair. And he suddenly decided to have one more try to treat her as a friend, to tell her everything, to win her. Down he sat on the side of the bed and seized one of her hands. But of all those splendid things he had to say, not one could he utter. For some fiendish reason, the only words he could get out were, "Dear lady, I should be so charmed, so charmed."
Brian Gere was reading Mr. Reginald Peacock's Day by Catherine Mansfield. The producer was Viv Beebe.